can't get no satisfaction unless it is Free Friday, the John Gibson podcast, Free Friday. Tell your friends who have been too cheap to subscribe that they can listen for free on Fridays. And let's start off with, you know, one of my thrills when I got to the network, and I think I'm talking about MSNBC, but it might have been Fox, was being able to introduce, go live to the president of the United States and say, ladies and gentlemen, the president of the United States. And so I'll say that now. Ladies and gentlemen, the guy who wants to be president of the United States.
We're in the middle of a pandemic that had cost us more than 85,000 jobs as of today. Lives of millions of people. Millions of people.
85,000 jobs, millions of people. Oh, he got it backwards. He kind of realized it right away.
Millions of jobs.
Millions of jobs. I mean, it's Mr. Magoo. You know, he's talking here about getting briefed every day about the coronavirus by a medical expert, and he can't remember who they are.
I'm not, and I have like all of you, but every day I have between an hour and a half brief with the former head of our former Surgeon General. Anyway, with docs across the country.
Docs across the country. This guy's got a bunch of docs. This Tara Reid thing isn't going away. He went on MSNBC with Lawrence O'Donnell. He couldn't have a friendlier interview. And Lawrence asked him about Tara Reid.
Do you remember Tara Reid, who worked there for around a year in 1992-93?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't.
Okay, well, you don't. But what do you say to women who would be inclined to vote for you but believe Tara Reid and therefore won't vote for you?
What do you say to women who were ready to vote for Joe Biden, eager to vote for Joe Biden, but this gives them serious pause because they do believe Tara Reid and you're not going to change their mind about that? What would you say to them about their vote?
Well, I think they should vote their heart. And if they believe Tara Reid, they probably shouldn't vote for me. I wouldn't vote for me if I believe Tara Reid.
Okay, well, let's put that issue to rest. I don't know. I mean, it's so funny to me to see in social media, a lot of cases, friends of mine, but some people I just know by reputation, who were just apoplectic during the primary. We can't nominate this guy. He's not all there. And even if he were all there, he's got a horrible record for progressives. And now they're just, 100% behind him because I think it's become clear to them that he's a empty shell. He's going to be a vessel for the return of the Obama administration. And Obama isn't even making a secret about it. I mean, he's making proclamations and arguing against Trump and attacking Trump. It's, Obama's campaigning. And I see, John Favreau, who was one of his speechwriters, one of those kids who writes these airy speeches for Obama. The other day when Brian Kilmeade said, it's clear now the election is Obama versus Trump, John Favreau said, listen to this dipshit. Well, I don't think anything could be clear. And speaking of which, Dr. Bright, who filed a whistleblower complaint when he was bounced out of his job as a key guy in the vaccine research department of either NIH or the CDC, I'm not sure which, he testified before Congress yesterday. The whole point of which was that Trump doesn't have a plan, and we're in for a very dark winter. Remember that quote? We're in for a dark winter. So at one point, One of the members of Congress who was, this was a House committee that was, that had him in to testify. And one of the members, Democrat, set him up for a question that, you know, gee, you have been arguing that we don't have enough N95 masks to take care of the serious problem we have. Is that right, Dr. Bright?
Dr. Bright, you understood that America would face a shortage of respirators in January. Is that right?
We understood America would face a shortage of N95 respirators for a pandemic response in 2007. And we have exercised and known and evaluated that number almost every year since 2007.
Wow, 2007, is it? Let's see, who was elected president the next year and served for 8 straight years, Dr. Bright? Oh, that wasn't President Trump, that was President Obama. So are you telling me, Dr. Bright, that during the 8 years of the Obama administration, you were screaming for more N95 masks because you knew a pandemic was coming? And it just, you could not get it through the Obama administration. Is that what you're saying? Nobody asked that. Sanjay Gupta talking about, you know, because people are talking about schools got open. So what does that mean for kids? Well, first of all, there have been less than 200 kids infected with a coronavirus in the country. It doesn't seem to be a big threat to kids. Now, you know, 200 is a lot, and I know a few kids have died. But there's a new bulletin out for hospitals to watch for a rare but nonetheless serious group of symptoms that are related to coronavirus.
We also know that the CDC just moments ago put out an alert now to hospitals to be on the lookout for children who are under the age of 21, who become sick with a persistent fever, have evidence of inflammation in their blood work, and have at least 2 organs involved with their illness. That's what the description of this illness now is. But again, it is rare, because I know this is going to frighten people as they hear this news. But for now, it's just another example of how this virus is so unusual, affecting everything from the nose to the toes and every organ in between.
Wow. I mean, that was an interesting little formulation there. Everything from the nose to the toes and every organ in between. But still, he said it's rare. I do think that, look, people, one of the things in the news right now that you see is people are in open revolt against this, this shutdown. I mean, they are seriously just, you know, no, we're not going to take it. Now, there's this guy named Dave Portnoy. I guess he's a YouTube star. Apparently he's on a sports show someplace. I don't know him. I'm not diminishing here because I don't know him. I just don't know him. But he posted a pretty interesting rant.
What the f*** is going on? When did this become flatten the curve, flatten the curve, flatten the curve to we have to find a cure or everyone's going to die? Like Fauci. Seems like a nice enough dude. I've always been the guy, no agenda. Looks like he could be maybe the grandfather in Wedding Crashers. Gets in front of the Senate. He's like, we reopen the country too quick. Everyone's dead. Where'd that come from? And the LA mayor. We're not opening the city till we find a cure. What? Find a cure? Who says we're going to find a cure? We haven't found a cure to cancer. It took AIDS 20 years or whatever. Do we even have a cure? So the economy just shut down? All we've heard forever, flatten the curve, flatten the curve, make sure there's hospital beds. We're there. Now all of a sudden it's like a 180. This is like taking a cross-country flight, 6 hours. They tell you flight 6 hours. 5 hours and a half go by. They get on the intercom like, oh, just kidding. We have another 10 hours. You can't do that.
And he's not kidding. The L.A. mayor, Eric Garcetti, who I think is an idiot, said exactly that.
We've never been fully closed. We'll never be completely open until we have a cure.
Until we have a cure. We're not going to be completely open until we have a cure. All of Los Angeles? What, are you out of your mind? I mean, Joe Rogan, a lot of you are fans of Joe Rogan, I know. He's, you know, funny guy, interesting guy. You know, I'm getting out of here.
Texas is buck wild, bro. You can bring a gun. Hey, I might move to Texas. Callan and I and Shab have actually talked about this. Like, here's the thing. If California continues to be this restrictive,
yeah,
I don't know if this is a good place to live. First of all, it's extremely expensive. The taxes here are ridiculous.
Yeah.
And if they really say that we can't do stand-up until 2022 or some shit like that, like, I might jet.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. This is silly. I don't need to be here. The only reason why I'm here is that I'm close to people like you.
Right.
A lot of my friends live here. Yeah. The store's here. But if they won't let us do the store, but we could do stand-up other places, why would we stay here?
Where in Texas, though?
I don't know, man.
Hmm.
Austin. I like Austin a lot. I like Dallas a lot. I like Houston, but...
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd live in Houston. I would definitely live
very
in...
very humid there.
Yeah. The summer's a motherfucker.
Oh, God. Brutal. But
Dallas is great.
Yeah, well, so there you go. You know, it's like another bunch of people about to come to Texas. And I don't blame them. I mean, California's my home state. I love it. But I don't love it the way with what it's become. And I don't mean just a shutdown. I mean, it's just obscenely crowded. It's a huge place, and yet it is obscenely crowded in the places where people live, in Southern California and the Bay Area. It's just really bad. And the taxes are ridiculous. I mean, if Trump hadn't lowered the tax rate, under the Obama tax rates combined with the California state tax, yeah, I think you were paying 52% of your income if you were a high earner. It's ridiculous. Okay, so let's go on to a couple other things, coronavirus related. So I have to do a little explaining about this. The Lancet, which is a medical journal, similar to, but not seriously, not of the reputational status of the Journal of American Medicine, JAMA. And the Lancet has published an editorial calling for the removal of Donald Trump in the election because he's not paying enough attention to what the CDC tells him and so forth. Maggie Haberman, who... you know, as a reporter of the New York Times, I kind of like Maggie Haberman. I certainly like her voice, I got to tell you. So she says...
I don't think I have ever heard of such a thing from a medical journal. It's stunning.
Well, you know, far be it from me to, you know, bring Maggie Haberman up short, but... in the 2004, 2005, 2006... era, the Lancet got itself into a huge, huge controversy based on its highly politicized epidemiological studies of the number of excess deaths in the Iraq War. And I wrote about this in my best forgotten book, How the Left Swift Boated America. There was an editor at the Lancet who hated George Bush, hated the Iraq War, and they put together an epidemiological study of excess deaths after the invasion that had the United States killing like 500,000 Iraqis. And it was, you know, based on some really phonied up studies. Which were phonied up because there was an election coming, a re-election of George W. Bush, and they really wanted him to lose. And the controversy about it straddled the election year, which of course was 2004. But the first iteration of this study came out before the election, and it was rushed into print to influence the election. Made big headlines all around the world. The U.S. has killed 500,000 Iraqis. And then they you know, got some criticism about it. And the editor's political biases were aired out. And so then they did a revision of their study, but still came up with a huge number. And then there was more criticism that stretched out into 2006. I mean, it really injured the reputation of the Lancet. And so when Maggie Haberman says,
I don't think I have ever heard of such a thing from a medical journal. It's stunning.
Well, yeah, but it's not. The Lancet's done this before. It's a highly politicized medical journal. And I mean, in this case, different than the case I was talking about, they just come out and say, well, we want Trump replaced. Please elect somebody else. By the way, this is a British medical journal. In the previous case, it was by implication. Well, Bush killed 500,000 Iraqis, so please don't reelect him. Now, turning to I just think this is funny. Mika on Morning Joe asking the question about Trump's response to the coronavirus pandemic.
I guess I would ask, how would you characterize our response so far? Negligence, avoidance, criminal?
Criminal. Criminal. So Joe Biden is asked. I don't have the bite, but I do know what he said. He's asked, would you pardon Donald Trump if he were convicted of a crime? And now the caller didn't specify what crime. It was a hypothetical and, you know, vague. But, you know, would you pardon Donald Trump? And Joe Biden says, no, I wouldn't pardon him. I can promise you I wouldn't pardon him. So maybe it's the crime of the response to coronavirus.
I guess I would ask, how would you characterize our response so far? Negligence, avoidance, criminal?
Criminal. So as a result of this Michael General Flynn stuff, which is real, and I mean, I'm kind of blown away that the liberal media is trying to pretend like this didn't happen, or that if it did happen, it isn't important. It really is just kind of startling for these people to have spent two straight years declaring any minute we're going to hear from Robert Mueller and learn that Donald Trump was colluding with Vladimir Putin to steal the election. For two straight years, they beat that drum to death. And now that we find out what kicked it off, a completely below-the-belt blow in which, you know, now, I mean, it is true that unmaskings happen all the time and are fairly routine. You know, and General Flynn's name was unmasked.
The thing that is so nonsensical about this attack is that by definition, you could not target someone by unmasking them, because when you get an intelligence product in front of you and it says U.S. person one, which is what it says, if you ask to see the name of that person, you don't know what the name is going to be until it comes back to you. So the idea that you could go and target Mike Flynn by asking for the names of U.S. person one to be unmasked just defies common sense.
Well, yeah, except Matt Miller, that no, it is true that the unmasking itself is not the indication of a crime. It's what happens afterwards, and what happened afterwards was leaking Flynn's name as the person who was speaking to the Russian ambassador Kislyak. And why would the name be leaked? Well, because the administration, the Obama administration, had fired Flynn as head of the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency. They hated him, and now they saw him coming in as the new national security advisor, and they wanted his ass. So they not only unmasked him, I mean, it was Biden, it was Comey, it was Clapper, it was Brennan, it was Jack Lew, it was Samantha Power, and almost three dozen others. Somebody then started leaking. And the leaking of Flynn's name led to Comey, I just sent some guys over there to talk to him, which led to he lied to us, which is a crime in the Flynn prosecution. And all the while, they're in a FISA court, lying to the FISA court about why they want these wiretaps on Carter Page, not confessing that it's on the basis of a dossier prepared by a British spy trolling Russian bars, laying out money paid by Hillary Clinton. I mean, the whole thing was just a setup. And there's, we know from the January 5th, 2017 meeting that Obama was right in the thick of it.
The entire inner circle was listening to this phone call, not for national security reasons. They were listening to it because they wanted to do anything they could do to damage the incoming administration. They were also doing it because they were desperate, because they did not have any evidence of Russian collusion. So they were trying so hard to find something because they'd gotten the ball rolling on this. And I think if we were to declassify any meetings about Crossfire Hurricane, you'd find that President Obama was in those and leading those. And I think if you were to ask any of these people under oath, was President Obama aware of the unmasking? Did he approve of the unmasking of General Flynn? I think you'll find this goes to the very top.
Yeah, well, now, so Trump's gotten hold of this, of course, and he's demanding that Lindsey Graham call Obama before the Judiciary Committee and have him testify. Lindsey, to his credit, thinks that is not a good idea.
No president's above the law, but we do have separations of powers, and I think it'd be a bad precedent to compel a former president to come before the Congress. That would open up a can of worms, and for a variety of reasons, I don't think that's a good idea.
Mr. Trump, he means they could do that to you, and they would if they won. And they're going to win eventually. I mean, if they don't win this time, they're probably going to win in 2024, if not 2028. And if you start calling Obama in and putting him under oath before Congress and trying to put him in a trap, you better be dead by the time that the Democrats win next time, because they will come after you. That's what Lindsey's saying. And you know, Trump is calling this Obamagate. And I think it's a reasonable term, because, you know, we know as of January 5th, Sally Yates is the acting attorney general, sitting in the Oval Office with Comey and Brennan and Clapper and God knows who else, and Obama. And Obama's talking about Flynn and Kislyak on the phone, and she didn't know what he's talking about. She's not been let in on it. And Obama is not one of the people who requested an unmasking. So it was Comey or Susan Rice. Susan Rice was in the meeting too. It was Comey or Susan Rice or Biden, or Clapper, or Brennan, who told him. And then Susan Rice writes this memo 15 days later saying Obama told us to play it by the book. Bullshit. I didn't believe that in the first place. I really don't believe it now. So John Meacham, you know, I mean, I just hate to criticize John Meacham. I like his books of history. But he goes on Morning Joe and just acts like a partisan. And he was asked about this Obamagate, and he says, I won't say the word. I won't say the word because this is just so typical of Trump.
It's the fullest manifestation of the Trump era. It's grabbing at nothing and attempting to mislead just enough people by demonizing his predecessor that he can make hay out of that. It's another blow against the role of fact in America.
Well, I'm sorry, historian Meechan. I hope your histories don't leave out facts like Obama was leading the January 5th, 2017 meeting in which he knew that it was Flynn talking to Kislyak, and he was directing Comey and Brennan and Clapper to proceed in some way. We don't know exactly what else was said in that meeting. We got Susan Rice saying he said play it by the book. Yeah, what book? I mean, you know, just, you got to watch these guys. I mean, Doug Brinkley and John Meacham write these history books, and Doris Kearns Goodwin. And, you know, once they go on the air and start revealing their politics, then you got to look askance at their history. Now, you know, okay, so take the example of Sidney Blumenthal. He was called Sid Vicious. Now, I'm reading, Sidney Blumenthal, since he's been out of politics, has been writing these books about Lincoln. And I'm reading them, and I guess that Sidney Blumenthal's own politics are reflected in these books about Lincoln. But I must say, first of all, they're voluminous. I mean, there's a whole series of them, and I think I'm on the mid one. This is right before – this is Lincoln in the 10 years before he was elected president. And, boy, you know, Blumenthal's quoting documentary documents of the time, speeches and letters and reportage on the leading figures of the time, including Stuyvesant Douglas and others. And the, you know, one of the reasons I'm fascinated by the book is that the detail is so extensive. And the other is that, man, you know, you see people talking about racism in our society today. It isn't even a candle flame next to the raging bonfire of racism at the time. Just off the charts, permeating almost everything. And, you know, it's just a really good lesson for people to be informed about what, you know, real honest to God racial depravity was going on in this country as compared to what we're being told we're suffering today. I just, you know, anyways, you know, I give Sidney Blumenthal some credit because his raging liberal politics, I don't think really come through. I mean, it's just hard to deny what people were saying in the public positions they were taking in the 1850s. It was, you know, but in any case, Meacham and Doug Brinkley, I do look at their histories with a little more of a jaundiced eye now. By the way, I want to add this. A couple of things about, we're all watching Netflix like crazy. Yeah, I get it. And I think I told you yesterday about one of my favorite Netflix shows, which is called Rust Valley Restorers, about these Canadians restoring cars. The other one I watched, which was really interesting, it was a BBC production about a group. I think it was started off with six couples who were chosen somehow. Brits, all Brits, to win, you know, compete over a period of weeks to win a house in Alaska where they could live in the wilderness. And the house had been built by a couple over about 30 years, hand-built by them. Guy walked into the wilderness and sometime in the mid-80s, staked out a claim on some acres. He and his wife built this house, built this life, lived out there in the wild, and now they're letting someone else take it over to continue their legacy. And the show is called Win the Wilderness. Well, you know, I think these reality shows should tell us the truth once in a while. I mean, over the course of this show, you see this older couple all the time, and they are getting on. I mean, they're pretty on towards ancient. And I can just tell you, you know, living out there and doing the things you have to do to live there, I mean, it was clear that they had enough. You know? But the idea that they're going to give their house away to a deserving couple from Britain is just absurd. I mean, it's pretty clear the producers of the show, the BBC, had to buy it from them. And we're never told where they're going, you know, to an old folks home or to, you know, a condo in Miami or whatever. We're never told the financial arrangements that induced them to, quote unquote, I'm making air quotes here, give away their house. And in the end, when one of the couples is chosen to win there, we're also not told, well, are they actually going to live there? Because this is all done in the summer. It's very nice, you know. But winter's coming, and this is kind of like out by Fairbanks, you know, where 70 below is sort of normal. Anyway, I watched all the episodes just to see what happened. I mean, you know, there were some people that, you know, were out there competing to live in the wilderness who were so ill-equipped. Just, you know, one couple was a vegan couple. I mean, a couple of scenes in this, you know, as they're competing for this house, they're in the house talking to the old couple who are going to give it away. Right, they're going to give it away. And by the way, we're talking about a place that's 5 acres in the middle of the wilderness. 5 acres is nothing. But, you know, there's seen, and there's at least 6 semi-automatic rifles hanging on the wall with big magazines and indicating that you may have to shoot a bear, you may have to shoot a moose, you may have to shoot, and you're going to have to, like, eat it. You're not going to live up here on bean sprouts. Anyway. It was an interesting show. To me, sort of interesting for what it didn't tell you, not for what it did tell you. Okay, so let's check out the mail, because I know I got a good one from Angry Rich. A lot of you have been asking me what's going on with Angry Rich. So he wrote me a note, thoughts. You can write me, too, at host@johngibson.com. So Angry Rich writes me a note. A, because of Biden, Dems have to keep the closing pain, the pain of closing the country, as long as possible. $600 plus unemployment insurance to hopefully keep the animals at bay. It won't. That's true. And we're seeing that now. I told you, 6 weeks was about all America could take. And right now, America's in revolt against this. B, from Andrew Rich, red state governors should just reopen en masse. Blue states will join. What's going to happen? Barr sue them for interstate commerce clause violations? Congress litigating this on TV? It's obvious. Nothing. C, nothing the media can do to win these arguments. People don't care anymore. They're pissed. There's a visceral, un-American patina to everyone. I'm not sure I understand what he means by un-American patina, but I think I understand that he agrees with me that most people are in revolt. Item D, surrogates and Sean need to consider the Chinese COVID nursing home massacre. Surrogates and Sean need to consider calling this the Chinese COVID nursing home massacre. Dem governors killed grandma has the added value of being true. Item E from Angry Rich. Guy who testified yesterday was a dud. No shit. Item F. Flynn may be a dud because of the power in numbers. The entire media calls it a conspiracy theory, and it dies on the vine. Needs some real meat. I don't know. Well, the only real meat is the Obama involvement, and we don't know quite enough about that yesterday. Item G. People getting on Lindsay for not calling Obama to testify are morons. He'd be crazy to do it. The backlash alone. Great. H. Someone needs to message how Democrats wanting continued shutdown have made male voters into sports victims. I am not kidding. And his last little note, B is the most important. B is red state governors should reopen en masse. Blue states will join. So that note from Angry Rich, I know many of you have been asking, you know, where's Angry Rich and what's going on with him? let's see. Well, there's always interesting stuff with him. My friend Ken, who makes those nice sort of painted versions of my picture, said, just FYI, your podcast audio is distorted since returning from vacation, especially your voice. Well, I got a couple of those, and I've tried to make sure that isn't the situation anymore. Okay, so BitchBox at 859-544-2766. Hi, Drew.
Hi, John. It's Drew. Reading about this whistleblower lamenting that Trump doesn't have a plan to take care of coronavirus. I want to know what it is about the office of the president that leads people to believe he's supposed to be our healthcare messiah. I see nothing in the Constitution that indicates he's supposed to operate in that capacity. There's nothing in his background that qualifies him for that. I've honestly haven't seen anything out of government at any level that really indicates that they're qualified to be the people to save us from this. So maybe the most qualified people are families, church leaders, local preparedness groups. Maybe the small on the smallest level, we are the most qualified to make safety decisions for ourselves. Otherwise, I want to say here at my house, we love you. We really appreciate all the time you put into your show. Thanks.
Drew, thank you. Appreciate it. Now, I got a call from Christy. I should preface this. Christy O'Hara Lynch lives in North Carolina. She's been a fan of the show forever. I've always seen her name on the subscription list. I met her at the Billy Joel concert. Very nice lady. She's got a daughter, Grace, who's 17 years old, who's got this sort of mysterious intractable medical problem where when she stands up, she has severe headaches. So there's something going on in her head, and they're barely giving her the medical attention she needs. Well, Christy sent me a note yesterday saying, I called the bitch box and I really went off. And so I was very anxious to hear this call.
Hey, John, it's Christy from Chapel Hill. I wanted to thank you and Khalil and all your listeners for your thoughts and prayers for my daughter, Grace. Calling to bitch today, massively bitch today. My son has had a 104-degree fever, rash, and will not be tested for COVID. He cannot be seen in the ER because ER will not see anyone who is sick. Cannot be seen in his doctor's office because they will not see anyone who is sick. We were sent to a COVID clinic. There he was... I guess they saw him and they would not test him because he has to meet one of two criteria. The first criteria is you have to have a fever and a family member who's a healthcare worker, or two, a fever and an acute respiratory distress. If you don't meet the criteria for category 1 or 2, you will not be tested for COVID-19. Furious. So now I've got a son who is clearly sick, 104-degree fever, 16-year-old kid, you know, healthy as can be. Something clearly is going on with him, but they will not test him. And my daughter is really sick. She's supposed to get a sleep study this weekend, and then next week she's scheduled for 3 spinal taps. And I'm in a conundrum because I don't know if my family's been exposed to the virus or not because they will not test them. So that is my bitch box for today. So far, as an American taxpayer, I have received zero stimulus money as an individual. I've received zero stimulus money for my business, and my son cannot get tested for COVID. In addition, in my area in Chapel Hill, I have multiple friends who are business owners. One owns 4 restaurants, zero stimulus money. My other one owns a pizza parlor, zero stimulus money. And one of my furniture manufacturers in Ohio has received zero stimulus money. I don't know where all this money is going or all these tests to whom they're going to, but they're not going to us taxpayers, and I am beyond furious.
Pissed.
Anyway, that's my bitch box for today.
Christy.
Hope all of you are doing well and stay safe.
Oh, Chrissy, legitimate bitches, totally legitimate bitches. I'm really worried about her son. That's terrible. You know, for those of you who listen free, we normally have Khalil at this point. Now he sent me a note. Let me get this note up because I really think that we should pay attention to what he's asking here. He didn't phone call, but he didn't make a phone call today. He said, I got an idea that might draw some listeners. Ask the black man. People send questions to you. We pick one or two and I answer on Friday. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I'd do that. I'd even make a special bumper for that. If people want to send a question, you know, you're curious about, I don't know, whatever you might be curious about black man, black people, black culture, whatever's in the news about blacks, ask the black man, host at johngibson.com. Now, birthday time. This guy had a hit in the early 60s called If I Had a Hammer. He's still alive today. Trini Lopez is 83. This wasn't really a hit, but was one of my favorites of his way back then.
I like to be in America. Okay, by me in America. Everything's free in America. For us, Muffy in America. Automobiles in America. Chromium still in America. Wires for wheel in America. Very big deal in America. I like the city of San Juan. Yeah! I know a boat if you can get on. Everyone there will give big cheer. Everyone there will have moved here. I'll drive my Buick through San Juan. If there's a road you can drive on, I'll give them free washing machine. What have they got there to keep clean? Immigrant goes to America. Many hellos in America. Nobody knows in America. Puerto Rico's in America. I like the shores of America. Comfort is yours in America. Knobs on the doors in America. Wall-to-wall floors in America. I'd like to go back to San Juan. Why don't you shut up and get gone? Everyone there will give big cheer. Everyone there will have moved here. I'll
bring a TV to someone. You're the sucker and the turner. I'll bring a new washing machine. What have they got there to keep clean? Everybody, la 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 la. Let me hear everybody now. Here we go. La 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 la. Oh, let me hear you a little bit louder now. Everybody now. La 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 la.
So don't get the impression that Trini Lopez was from Puerto Rico. He was not. He was born in Dallas, Texas, and he was the son of Trinidad Lopez II, who was a Mexican singer, dancer, Mexican-American singer and dancer, and his mother was from Mexico as well. But for some reason in America, he took on that sort of Puerto Rican thing. Anyway, it's have a good weekend. I hope you don't get sick or anybody you know gets sick. Write to me at host@johngibson.com. Remember, ask the black man, Khalil. We'll see how that works out. There's a great possibility of danger there, but, you know, I'll be careful. Call the Bitch Box at 859-544-2766. And follow me on Twitter @GibsonRadio.